Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast bonus episode. This was originally a Patreon bonus episode. That was our time travel episode. Sean's with me. Josh is with me. This is not part of that show. This is just the intro to that show. If you were on Patreon, you got these episodes way back in, what, September, October? Maybe even before that.
It's been a while.
Yeah, and I believe we talk about Josh's notes for this episode.
It's kind of like we're time traveling right now.
Nice.
We actually ran out of time. We went for it was close to 2 hours. This is going to be two episodes, but this is kind of what it's like to be a Patreon supporter. So if you like this sort of thing and you want us to do more, let Josh pick a topic episodes. By all means, let us know and we'll do that.
I like you guys more than that.
We've already done Lord of the Rings. It's over.
Yeah, okay? We've done Star Wars. We've done the Alien trilogy. other than Indiana Jones, which we should wait for either Harrison Ford's death or the next film to do. Yeah, there isn't any major topics left.
Yeah, we even did Harry Potter in like a week.
Yeah. poor things.
Ideas for next year's. We didn't do as many Patreon episodes as I think we'd like to do. We're still going to try to do the flick chart thing. We'll shoot for monthly, but sometimes 4 months goes by and you just don't know. but some ideas. Jason from New Mexico gave us a bunch of VHS tapes. There's no reason we can't run through those. Josh has a VHS. He also gave us a player. So whether either we pass it around or we watch them together and kind of do one at a time. That could be fun.
Can we watch VHS on a 4K TV?
We could try.
We can because of the component video works for the standard outputs on VHS. I've tried it. So. Well, it looks as you would expect, but, you know, just larger. I mean, it's fuzzy. We're so used to now the crisper images that it looks like it's backwards, but I'm always worried about tracking, and tracking seems to be fine.
I kind of love the way VHS looks on a nice clear TV. It's nostalgic.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like watching vinyl.
Yeah, I watched about an hour of a 1990 Cubs game today on YouTube, and it was like bad, but it was great. You know, I just loved it.
But it is a long episode, so we'll send you to that right now. Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic bonus podcast, not just for Patreon, but this is kind of what a Patreon bonus episode's like, so we're kind of giving you a taste so that you'll know what being a Patreon supporter is like. It's our bonus time travel episode, and at this point I'll hand it over to Josh. No intros, it's a bonus, you know who we are.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for the introduction.
We do
have a very special guest. She comes from the land of 10,000 lakes and has descended upon the rural Quad Cities area for a guest appearance. I don't know her, but she joined one of our chat groups online, and eventually she just kept showing up. So her name is Beth. I live with her. That's our relationship. So
I'm only special to Josh.
She's special, that's for sure. And she is an expert on the thought process of time travel. Now, not an expert at time travel. That would be different.
That I've evidenced to you.
Oh. That's a really solid point. You haven't actually not said that you're a time traveler, but
do you actually know how you met? How many times?
I know the current iteration. I'm on this timeline. Yeah. I'm sure there's a divergent timeline out there.
It took me several times to get this right, yes.
To get it right? You have so many times that you can do it again, right?
I'm fully satisfied with this timeline.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Okay. So the point is that when we met, we started talking about our favorite types of movies, and eventually I let on that I was on a podcast, probably within the first 48 hours of talking to you or so. And
48 minutes.
No, it really took a while, because I was like, I don't want to say that right off, because that'll be like, oh, I equate my value to being on a podcast, right?
You didn't want there to be something I could go look at, a library of content.
Right. I wanted her to have the normal beginning dating stalking value, you know?
Whereas I lead by giving them a card. That's how I meet women.
I have cards. I could have done that.
I just never tell anyone. And then my wife's like, he's on a podcast. I'm like, shut up. I don't want to talk about it.
Well, the reason why I was really glad that Beth agreed to be on is because she does such a good job of centering my thoughts, which go off into the wilderness when it comes to creative ideas and time travel thoughts. Because I'm like, ooh, what about this? What about this? And she's like, but wait a minute, you don't understand what science is. And so that's why I want her to comment on a lot of these films that she has seen, including the ones that you guys have seen of these. Now, there inevitably is going to be something that we miss. For example, this week I heard about the movie Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, I never did see that. Did it have anything to do with time travel? It has time in the title! But I realized that it probably doesn't matter, because it was a crappy movie, as I understand it.
Terrible.
Terrible. Awful. Even with our podcast favorite, Jake Gyllenhaal, as the lead. So
before you go any further, the funny thing about this, Josh has a list of this paper outline. And if any of you have seen School of Rock, at some point Jack Black tries to explain the history of like rock music. This list is a lot like that, and it's pretty amazing.
It's like a very poor Venn diagram, okay? You gotta draw your own conclusions from it.
We should take a picture of it and put it on our Facebook page in the episode. Or maybe that could be our cover art or something.
Yeah, that would be good.
It really is amazing.
Okay, so we've sequestered most of these films into categories, because if you're going to talk about time travel as a film concept, you want to get into like-minded films, I would think. Obviously, a time machine is centered at most of these films, okay? But then there are other things that some films mess with, such as like the butterfly effect of time travel, tangent universes, there's alternate timelines, there's people that have time looping abilities and whatnot, be it a superhero thing or some other thing that goes along with it. And then there's like the weird ones, say frequency, for example, where you're communicating through time somehow. And a lot of these, if we started listing off a film, we'd go back and forth between different genres. I figure let's stick to, you know, the basic categories that we've created here. So then at the end of the show, we'll get to what we would consider perhaps our top, our favorite time travel films. And when we post this, hopefully others will include their favorites in here as well. I've got my son's top five in here as well. So to start off with...
Did you warn Bob and Sean to prepare a list of their top five time travel movies?
When we initially came up with the idea, I did say we would talk about our favorites, yes. But specifically a top five, I'm sure that by the end of this show, I'll know that Interstellar isn't on Bob's list. And so...
Are we doing top worse?
Top worse.
I mean, the science behind it's great. The movie itself is awful. Like, worst movie of all time. Awful. Anyway, continue.
Anyways... We could probably do a bonus episode just talking about Interstellar's merits and demerits.
Without even doing it, we could just go back through all our episodes and clip out the little parts we talk about. We have an episode there.
Yep. Okay, well, let's start then with the main category of time travel films, okay? And that would be the concept of the time machine. So well,
even before that, I would say... There's different rules that people have theorized of how the time travel is going to work. And the first one I think of is the time loop that you get a redo, if you will. So you can't, just the one person or whatever they bring with them circles back to an earlier place in time and they can make different choices. Two, there's, and I think the classic that I think of that for that is Groundhog's Day. Two, you've got where the rule, time can be changed by traveling, like Back to the Future. If we go back in time, we can make things be different. Or three, if you go back in time, you were always there, and time is a fixed thing that cannot be changed. But anyway, so within time travel, time machines, you would have all three of those possibly at play. What were you going to say about
time machines? I was just going to start listing things because that's my only ability. Okay.
King of the list.
Yes, that is true. To begin with, the most famous one would clearly be Back to the Future and that entire trilogy. You've got the GMC DeLorean is the actual time machine that uses something called a flux capacitor, and you need to go 88 miles per hour and all of the gigawatts involved, and everyone knows these movies. But to me, it's kind of it's the genesis of understanding the entire genre is going back to 1985 and sitting at the drive-in and watching this movie.
Well, and then in this movie, how it works is not really important, other than that they're going to need a certain amount of power is important to the story. But otherwise, the focus is on what changes are being made in time and how will they have some kind of plan that they need to execute on that, fixing a time error that they've broken by Marty showing up there by accident and screwing up the meeting of his parents.
And consequently getting hit on by his mother, which is always a danger if you go back in time, I suppose, because...
So this is obviously...
This is the main concern that Josh has to talk about.
Well-loved movie. What is so special about this movie? It's very funny.
The characterization of the characters. I mean, Doc Brown and Marty McFly and his mom and George McFly are such well-developed characters. And everyone has got such an effervescence of them. It's like it's comedy, it's adventure, it's science fiction, all kind of rolled into one. And to me, that's what works. And plus, one of the best scores that I can remember. It's in my top 20 scores.
Well, now, Beth, you asked that rather pointedly. I mean, do you not think that Back to the Future is special?
I love this movie. I love this movie. It's in terms of time travel movies, it's fairly simple, but interesting that you're going to be able to have changes on the future. I think that idea of being able to have an effect on the future is what makes all time travel stories so captivating and my favorite kind of stories. The idea that I think it's basically an evolved process for us to think, what could we have done better? What would the outcomes have been if we had done different things? And that's what makes us so interested in time travel stories. But here, it's not so much about choosing a change that you want to make. It is in the second movie, but in the first movie, it's more fixing this thing we've accidentally broken.
And that type of small scale storytelling is it's part of part of the charm of the movie, because it is not trying to say anything big or important. It's talking specifically about this one family. There's no talk of how much these changes reverberate, other than beyond the family. And the main character Biff, obviously too. But like, you know, there's people's lives who are changed by the fact that George is now a major superstar writer. I mean, he's got an agent, he's got an accountant. Those lives have all been changed now. That's not part of this story, though.
Yeah, it's true. And he manages to still live in the same house, no matter what has happened in the past 30 years.
But I think there's no obvious paradox or anything from the science of time travel. I don't think they make any major mistakes.
Which is definitely something that we'll find as we talk about all of these other films. There becomes a lot of, like, well, that doesn't work if you do this. That doesn't work if you do this. But as time travel is, in theory, a theoretical thing, these types of movies always seem to get away with the idea that we don't actually know anything, and so they can just invent whatever they want to.
Well, that's my hardest part of the time travel thing. It's like I can watch a movie and just kind of take it for what it is. But if I start to think about the science of time travel that clearly doesn't exist... it's hard for me to wrap my head around it, because if it ever exists in the future, it exists all the time, right? Isn't that kind of the...
In terms of putting the science aside, in terms of just filmmaking, it can be so difficult to do time travel because using it as a cheat. So often a movie will use it to cheat to make a story work, and that...
I think using it that way really sucks. I hate when a movie does that, when it's obvious that, we can just go back in time and change everything, you know, like Time Stone in Avengers. Like, we've got a Time Stone, we can just turn back time and everybody will be alive again.
If I could turn back time.
You know, it's time travel. That's not great storytelling. That's a cheat.
Yeah.
Yet I do think Back to the Future manages to be a fun story.
No matter what. What I neglected to mention to begin with, and I should have led with this, is H.G. Wells has a story from the early 1900s called The Time Machine. And I'm sure that there were stories that existed prior to that that involved the same subject. But what I do know of it is the author of War of the Worlds created something that people were really into and eventually became... a big movie starring Guy Pearce, I think, and I never did see it because it looked so terrible from the trailer. But I know that this is kind of like the first big story that was out there in the public.
I mean, kind of, but there was also, I mean, to a lesser extent, without necessarily the scientific part, time travel begins in movies in 1921 with a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court, an adaptation of. Mark Twain's story. I don't know who stars in that version, because obviously Bob Hope does one. I think 30 years later he does that movie as well. That's far better known than the original one. But that was the first time that they did time travel in a movie, and then H.G. Wells' story gets adapted after that. I think 29 is the first time they did it.
Okay. Well, I definitely wanted to touch on that one. Not knowing the story or whatnot, it may be intriguing, but there is an actual machine involved, and right. It's like something that you have to pedal and turn, and it's very steampunky, I'm sure. But also, in terms of pop culture, we'll fast forward 4 years from Back to the Future, and in the same year that Back to the Future 2 is released, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure comes out. Now, as unconventional as a DeLorean might seem for a time machine, Bill and Ted uses a phone booth as a time machine. And this one is more of like a straight-up fun movie than having anything to do with science and changing the future and whatnot. I haven't seen Bill and Ted in at least 25 years. And it's on Prime right now, and I keep waiting to like click on it when I have a moment to, because I really want to watch it again, but it turns 30 next year, and I know that we'd get a chance to talk about it, and I kind of just want to wait till then. But Bill and Ted.
So obviously the story of high school students that get access to a time travel movie, I think mostly to work on their school report, it has no respect for the original timeline, if you will, because they're sending all these guys back to their original time with knowledge of water slides and malls, and there's no repercussions.
Yeah, no, nothing. Nothing changes. And I never did. Why do they need to? Why does George Carlin need to go back in time?
He's trying to make them into the people that they'll need to be.
Why wouldn't they?
To save the world. But
they've already been that.
That's what I'm talking about. These are the problems, right? With this story disrespects the idea that. So if George Carlin coming back is the cause of them becoming what they will later be, what was the cause of George Carlin knowing to come back and do that? That's when you have a paradoxical problem in your time travel
story.
And
the movie doesn't care.
No, this doesn't care. This movie doesn't care about anything. It's all just a glorious romp.
Yeah, I don't remember thinking too hard. I just wanted to listen to them say, whoa, and dude, and things like that a number of times, which
Preston
they do.
Bill S. Preston Esquire.
Yes.
Despite that he doesn't have a lot of great...
No. I remember asking after the film, what does Esquire even mean? I didn't quite get it. I thought it was like junior or the third. Yes, of course, but as a 10-year-old.
Maybe his dad is an attorney and he feels it just carries down to him as a title. I don't...
The weirder time travel is Roman J. Esquire. That one I don't understand.
Roman J. Israel?
Why is he going back in time? I remember...
Israel Esquire.
Yes.
I still don't mind that movie.
Is it true, I think, that there's a rumor that they're making a new Bill and Ted movie?
Yes.
Yes. Boy, it's been in development for such a long time, but both Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves are on board, and I don't think it has a director yet, but they do want to do a third one, 26 years now after that second movie? okay. I mean, I'm all for it because I think it could be a lot of fun.
I hope it gives us more look into the electric guitar-based future that was planned.
Oh, yeah. When they're actually wild stallions?
Well, I think they're going to be like depressed 40 or at this, what, 50-year-old failed rock stars? That kind of...
Yeah, we're supposed to rule the world.
Well, but no, not during their lifetime.
Oh!
Their music changes the far-off future. They're... In their lifetime, they're never actually stars, as I understand it.
I would give anything like to be appreciated in my time. That kind of
thing. You're on a podcast. Keep working.
Yeah.
The Bill and Ted 2 is actually in the Criterion Collection.
What?
Yeah. It is. It's in the Criterion Collection. There's actually a Criterion Collection release for Bogus Journey.
Is it because of William Sadler's nuanced performance as Death?
That's something to it, but I think there's a lot of people actually appreciate Bill and Ted 2 for its artful strangeness, because it is a weird movie. The robots, Death, all that stuff that's part of it is very strange and rather artful. I wasn't a big fan of it, but...
I just remember the Kiss song, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, isn't that what it is?
I don't remember.
Okay, additional Time Machine films. Primer. We're getting to like real low budget stuff here compared to what we've been talking about.
Primer, I can't remember everything about how it works, but I know it's looked on as one of the movies that gets the science of time travel right, where it's internally consistent by its own rules.
It is.
Really, in terms of just filmically speaking, that really is what matters, is setting your own rules and not violating them. Movies like, you know, we'll talk about X-Men Future Past, I'm sure, because that's a movie that violates its own rules of time travel. But this movie is very consistent. It creates a universe in which these characters exist, and they have a specific set of rules as to how that time travel in this universe works. And really, from a filmmaking standpoint, if you can just set rules that make sense, it doesn't matter if the science is any good. From a movie standpoint,
I agree.
And now this one, I thought, always had a cool premise in that someone has created a time machine in like their garage, and they transfer it to a storage unit. And in order to go back in time, they have to keep visiting the storage unit. And then the friends kind of turn against each other because one of them wants to do something different with time travel than the other. And it always created this interesting thought in my head of, well, yeah, you've got to be selfish with your time travel, because if you let one person know, that could really screw everything up. You'd have to have a time cop situation, which we'll get to eventually.
And I thought it was really thoughtful, like that I believe they avoid their other selves.
Mm-hmm.
So they're hiding out from each other.
This is a very specific thing, because they have a rule about like you can only go back 6 hours, but if you have to know that you're going to do it, so like you have to tell yourself to go to a place and stay there so you can be out in the world.
But then I believe they think of bringing another time machine in with them, so when they're back 6 hours, now they can loop back even further. You could have this iterative effect.
Ooh, that's kind of cool. I forgot about the movie.
I do too.
I like it when you say big words, like iterative. It expands my vocabulary. Okay, along the lines of Primer, but more of like a comedy instead. Safety Not Guaranteed.
I love this movie.
Of course.
But it's not a time travel movie.
But it kind of is. Okay.
I like this debate of what is and is not a time travel movie with Josh. Because he has, in all areas of his life, a set of rigorous internal standards. And then you can fuck with those for comedy reasons. It's but true. You got to be gentle and establish a safe word.
We screw with that timeline every week.
I know. Yeah. Okay. Best part of the show.
But it is a time travel movie because... Okay, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen Safety Not Guaranteed, like, tune out for a couple minutes here. But at the end of the film, he's clearly got a machine that does, in theory... It does something, and it disappears. That's a big deal.
Well, anyway, so this is a story of Aubrey Plaza finding an advertisement, I think, in Craigslist for its partner wanted for time travel. You must bring your own weapons...
Safety not guaranteed.
And of course, that's irresistible. And she works in some kind of news outlet, and they send a group of people to go investigate this for the purpose of making a story about it. Then it turns out he actually is being followed by people, and at the end, Aubrey Plaza and he get on a machine and actually disappear.
Yes, and this is the actual story of somebody putting something in Craigslist is based off of a true thing that actually happened. Somebody put an ad in there stating just that.
Oh, I forgot the best line of the post. I've only done this once before.
Well, it was nice of him to warn everyone, yeah. But Mark Duplass is the character in question that's making these claims, and it was the first movie that I saw him in. It was the first time I was introduced to Aubrey Plaza and Jake Johnson, even, and this it's just fantastic from beginning to end, because you think that it's going to a certain place, and then it just kind of surprises you. It keeps surprising you throughout the film. It's of the three films of Colin Trevorrow's that I've seen so far, it's by far the best. Like,
it's not saying much.
It's not saying much, but it's one of those all-time really good, like, lesser-known indie-type films that I've seen.
Unlike, say, Primer or Back to the Future, this movie isn't about people traveling in time. Or if there is time travel, it's just in the last few seconds of the film, and we don't know how it goes for them.
It just happened to fall in the category of time machine. Things with a time machine in them.
Allegedly.
But now you forget he did this once before.
Allegedly.
I love this movie. It's an adorable comedy romance that happens to have that element referenced basically at the end. Because what the best part of the movie is about not knowing that he actually has a machine that might actually work.
Probably works.
And so that's really the central point of the movie is these characters. It's a character piece.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to me, it's a lot like of the movies on Josh's list here, it's probably my favorite. I mean, you could go with the obvious, the Back to the Futures, the Terminators, whatever, but it, in a lot of ways, reminds me of, like, The Witch or Hereditary, where it's about the people in it, and then all of a sudden this, oh, there really is a witch, there really is a time-traveling machine, and that's what I think is so great about it.
Speaking of Terminator, we'll get to that in just a moment, but in terms of other obvious machine films, Hot Tub Time Machine... No, we went from Primer, pretty
pure
serious
science.
Movie.
Yeah. Pure science in this
right.
One.
Magically at a hotel, Craig Robinson, John Cusack, et al. Encounter a
Who's
hot
that?
Tub. John
Who's
Cusack?
Et al. Sorry. Wasn't that funny. I'm
See, sorry. Your vocabulary is fine.
Is it?
Yeah.
That was very iterative of you. Am I using it wrong? I don't know. Hot Tub Time Machine has an actual hot tub in it. If you get in it, you can travel back to the 80s and see younger versions of yourself do stupid things and change all the things that you meant to in high school. I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was going to be... good, bad, like one of those things where I forget about, but at the time I'm enjoying myself because I like Cusack, because I like Craig Robinson, because I like the 80s. But it actually does have the slightest bit of depth, and most of the comedy bits in this work. It's not a legendary comedy, but it still worked for me. It's co-written by Steve Pink, a frequent collaborator of John Cusack's, which we'll talk about on an additional on our regular show this week. So it's got some of those parts of Cusack stuff that you like, but the machine itself isn't all that glamorous, other than it looks like a rundown hot tub that lights up when they're traveling through.
It is just a time to hot tub, really. Yeah. It's actually more that ridiculous stuff that they pour on it that turns it into a time machine.
Yeah.
But this one is interesting in terms of its time travel, just basically because they essentially time travel through their own bodies as much as they travel through the hot tub. Because they go back and you see them as their young selves when they look in a mirror, and then they're themselves in the rest of the movie, which is kind of a nonsense way of doing this, but... you have to do it so you have the characters that you recognize as opposed to their young selves. But I'm curious, when you look at that, Beth, and you look at time travel that way, time traveling within your own body, What does that tell? What does that say to you?
Well, we have a separate category for this where you are just thinking your way back, like the movie Arrival. She doesn't ever get into a machine, or there's no obvious, but yet she has access to another access to the past through her own thoughts somehow. I have officially not seen Hot Tub Time Machine. So it seems in a gray area whether they needed the hot tub or the goo to function as their machine.
We should ask Chevy Chase. He is the proprietor of the machine.
In a weird way, it works in your looper category too. So Hot Tub Time Machine covers the most time travel genres.
Including nostalgia trips.
This is the most complex time travel movie we're going to discuss today.
Do they change time at all?
Oh yeah. That's the character, the bald guy. What's his name?
Rob Corddry.
Rob Corddry. He changes time so that he becomes a very wealthy, like,
becomes a singer of Motley Crue.
Right.
Creates Google, but they call it Lugal, I believe.
Yeah.
basically ends up running the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and leads to a sequel that is far more gross, terrible, disgusting, yeah, and hard to watch.
God awful.
And it has no John Cusack either, yeah, so it's kind of pointless.
Well, he was the worst part of the movie.
Oh, good God. I see what this day is going to be about. Okay, other movies that have machines in them. Project Almanac is a lesser known, like, young adult type of movie that I'm only going to kind of touch on a little bit.
Because it's garbage?
You're, I think, the only one in the room that's seen it.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not a good movie.
And I just know that it was produced by Michael Bay. And if you get Platinum Dunes involved, you probably aren't going to have high expectations for anything. But especially in a genre where you want to think a lot, which is time travel, it doesn't lend a lot of confidence. So I probably will never see it.
There's no thought whatsoever in this movie. It's just a brainless, mindless, idiot plot. And the time travel is basically just used as a plot device.
Which one are you pointing at?
I point at all the movies that you haven't yet spoken about.
Yes, I can see them, too.
Speaking of movies that aren't time travel movies, The Terminator.
They are. Wait, hold on a second. Okay.
I apologize for...
First, he's supposed to correct me to say it. There is or is not a "the" in The Terminator.
Well, it's The Terminator.
Oh, shoot. I meant to do it wrong on purpose.
He is Jack Black in High Fidelity.
Like Star Trek IV, the dolphin one.
Oh, my God. Okay, we will get to the dolphin one later.
That one's a time travel movie.
Okay.
Though.
That's what they should have called Star Trek IV.
The dolphin one.
But there are no dolphins.
Hey, close
or
enough.
Or the whale one or whatever. I like the dolphin one better. But...
Thank you, Bob.
I see how your mispronunciation or misthought of what the actual animal involved is has now permeated the podcast. So this is great.
It had to be whales for the whale songs. There's no dolphin songs.
That you're aware of. Okay, so the Terminator films.
In this movie, time travel is just window dressing so that we can have someone appear from the past and change the future. There's no talk about what the machine is. They can never go back that way. It's just like... It doesn't matter how
they
travel
in
time.
There is a lot of talk about what the machine is. In fact, she asks him, literally, Sarah Connor asks Kyle Reese in the first film, tell me what going through time is like. And he's like, it's cold.
Things can only travel through time if it's wrapped in human flesh. So we should have had a bunch of dead, pile of dead bodies, each with an AK in it.
Like, what the hell?
So he comes out with weapons. It's just nonsense.
Okay, all right. First of all, the Terminator films, the first two are great, and there are good things to find from two of the sequels. The last one is garbage, and I'm very excited about the next one.
A major continuity problem in that he sends a guy back in time to become his own father, so he wouldn't have been born if he hadn't done that. So you tell me.
Wait, don't you like these? We just watched them.
Famously, Josh and I have had a debate about Terminator in front of his son where I took the side that Terminator is good and you said it was just a jump scare movie. Like,
no, I said that it was more a horror film than a science fiction film.
You said
film.
It was, quote, just a jump scare movie.
I said it held more in common with Halloween than it did something else, which
utter
is true.
Again.
Oh, my God. You got to... Never mind. I'm not going to be able to win this on this show.
I'll side with you on that one.
Thank you very much.
The Terminator is so much more than a jump scare movie.
There's not much depth to that, to the Terminator, honestly. There is a lot of just him appearing and popping up and shooting at her. So I kind of agree. There is a great deal of Jason in the Terminator. A little bit more than I think people are willing to admit. But I don't understand how it's not a time travel movie
it's a time travel
movie. Okay. Because the plot doesn't exist without, I mean, even as flawed as it is, it's definitely, I mean, it doesn't make any sense how Kyle Reese becomes his father and he sends him back. That's nonsense.
It does make sense if you think about it.
Oh, please, go ahead. No, tell me, which one is it, the chicken or the egg?
The egg.
The way that it works, when a man loves a woman, you asked how it worked, and so I was trying to explain it. In this particular case, not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but I felt like Terminator is one of the most important time travel films. Not that everyone's time traveling throughout the entire series, but it's important because it actually made me, when I was watching Terminator 2 as a 12-year-old, almost 13-year-old or so, I thought to myself, oh, wait. What if the events that happen like in the present day are people coming back and changing things? Well, it really opened up my mind to the ideas of time travel more than what I was used to in my single years, like Back to the Future. Okay. Oh, cool. He had a machine. Then he disappeared and all of a sudden things are old. But the Terminator franchise opened me up to different possibilities. Like, and also, would we want to do things if we had the ability to time travel? Like, would we go back and kill Hitler as a baby? You know, one of the famous arguments, if you had that ability, would you do that?
What you're saying just made me have a realization that the most likely thing is that Elon Musk is from the future.
See?
And how he's trying to stop Skynet is how you would do it, which is like, make yourself an important person in the technology field by using information you'd learned in the future. And then
burn yourself
talk out. About the danger of artificial intelligence.
See, there you have it. So Terminator is very important.
Okay, but you still you totally avoided my question.
What is your question? I'm sorry. It's possible that I just didn't hear you.
Because it doesn't work. The Kyle Reese coming back in time to be John Connor's father doesn't work.
Perhaps. Is John Connor always in existence and he had a different father in theory, but it just so happened? Oh, no, that doesn't work either. No.
So either the rules of this universe are Reese always goes back and he's always his father. Time cannot be changed.
That's very interesting. Okay, so Kyle Reese had to be born at some point post-1984. But then he gets sent back to 1984, but he's dead in 84.
If it was always inevitable that Kyle Reese would become John Connor's father, then whatever happens with Skynet is also inevitable.
Which is exactly what the films end up doing. Skynet is inevitable and does come to fruition.
No, that's in a more different way, that it comes to fruition differently, which apparently was always inevitable. And it's a movie about nothing.
This was supposed to be the let's discuss the fun aspects of time travel, not change my entire mind about beloved franchises. I hope you guys are enjoying the shit out of this, by the way.
Yes.
Very much. Oh, definitely.
Moving on.
Long time listener, first time caller.
Right. Other films that have actual time machines in them, 12 Monkeys has a time machine in it. Gosh, I've seen it twice, but I can't remember specifically the machinations of the time machine and what it means. But
I blocked it out.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a Terry Gilliam film, so we know it's weird. And Bruce Willis in a Terry Gilliam film is extra weird because he doesn't seem to belong. But
maybe Sean knows what happens in the movie.
Not really.
Excellent. I mean,
it's kind of fudged as to how the machine kind of works. I don't know.
So just other things with the time travel machine, like
Time Bandits, another Gilliam type of project. There's like a big I saw this when I was a kid, and there are a lot of British actors involved in this, including like David Warner. I think Sean Connery's in the movie. A lot of familiar faces from the Monty Python group or whatnot. And there's this, I want to call it like a pensieve, like in Harry Potter, where you look at something just like the evil character does and tries to see throughout time where somebody is, and then they can, you know, do good or bad things because he has this power to see through time. Anybody? Anybody? No? Okay. Time Bandits. It's a good film from my youth.
You know, you're talking about time machines, and I got a question for you because I know there's a movie on your list that you're going to talk about that you absolutely love, and I'm curious if you would consider it a time machine, because in About Time, they have to go into a closet.
Yes.
And now it's not necessarily that the closet is a time machine, but it kind of is because they have to use it.
It seemed to be to me that in About Time, they needed more of a secluded spot.
This is a Domhnall Gleeson and Rachel McAdams romance, by the way, from 2013.
That they always knew was always there in all the times that they were going to visit.
Yes, a constant that happened to be isolated, and it was a good spot to return to. I would say that the closet is a de facto, like, casing, sure, but I think that they could have used, say, like an outhouse that they knew had been there for all time. It is a specific spot to land to.
It's interesting that they never address it.
No, it does bring up a good point of all of these things, which is, well, you might be traveling back in time, but where exactly will you land? In Back to the Future, you know, he's driving through the mall at 88 miles per hour, and then all of a sudden he nails a scarecrow and goes into a barn because that's what was there.
And Doc Brown knew that. He knew exactly where everything was. He planned that to the credit of the film, that he knew exactly where the map was, so he knew where to make sure he landed so he didn't, you know, drive into something.
Old man Peabody owned all of this.
Yeah, that's right. So it does matter, though. Like in the Terminator movies, for example, you know, when they're going back, the orb that they arrive in kind of cuts into what they've got. So it really doesn't matter where they land per se.
Well, or interestingly, they can't control where they land very well.
Yes.
Weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
Nonsense.
It's one of those things that isn't completely wrapped around in any of these movies, really, except for Back to the Future or in About Time, that saying they need to have like a constant there. Anyways, okay, more time machine stuff. Harry Potter and the Prison of Azkaban. If you think about that movie, Bob, I think you've probably seen it once. You admitted to watching a bunch of them at one point.
Or anyway, bonus episode.
The idea is that she has a device that can send her back in time, but her original self is already there doing the things her original self already did and anyone she brought with her.
This is the Time Turner, which they could have used a whole hell of a lot in the other Harry Potter movies, but they don't. So just the Prisoner of Azkaban, it's important. It is kind of a cool little trinket, I suppose.
This makes Galaxy Quest a time travel movie because of the Omega 13 device.
Oh, that's very exciting for you.
I love that movie.
Add it to the list.
It's okay. I just did. But anyway, if we spend all the time on just time machine movies, you'll run out of.
Well, characters. I know, but that was the biggest category, and that's what I wanted to start with because
you,
that's
so
where
you
our
consider
mind comes
the time turner a flaw in the Harry Potter universe.
I consider it a convenience that
it really
could
only
be
existed
used
so
again.
Hermione could go to class.
So she could make all of her extra classes, yes, of course. And then it just happens to be something that Dumbledore knows she can use later to fix the injustice of executing Buckbeak.
But whenever something is used as a convenience, it's why are they not using this all the time? Why isn't the other side always using this technology all the time?
But if you go that, if you go down that route with Harry Potter, and I think those movies are good enough that you don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
You, why aren't they using the cloak constantly?
Mm-hmm. Well, they use it a lot.
They do.
A lot.
Okay, gosh. Timeline? That is that Richard Donner film that was adapted from a Michael Crichton novel and had Paul Walker et al. In it.
He was in it too?
Yes. He's in a lot of these. I never saw the entire thing.
Just garbage.
I read the book.
It is just absolute utter garbage.
but I know that they're traveling through like a lot of different timelines to medieval and ancient to the present day and whatnot. But I don't know the full story of timeline.
It's Bill and Ted-esque.
Paul Walker does say, whoa, I think.
Whoa. That's his last words, too.
Oh, Jesus. Wow.
He was too fast, too furious.
What if he's in a time loop?
That's okay.
It's like he's still alive, but in the past. Stuck. He went back in time.
Oh, that's what the burnout was.
Okay, this is wrong. Oh. Cut this out.
Okay. All right, let's...
Transitional movie.
Transition.
Transitional movie, Star Trek for the Dolphin one. The Starship Enterprise is a time machine, but it's also in your category, sketchy physics, where the way we're traveling in time is just like, oh, there's science. We went by science. Like, I think they drive really fast at the sun, and now they're back in the 90s or 80s.
The 80s. Yeah, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home from 1986. In order to save the world from this probe, they're going to attempt time warp. Now, this is not the Rocky Horror Picture Show that we're talking about, actual time warp. And so they take their Klingon bird of prey and do breaking speed around the sun, and they're magically back in 1986.
In a bird of prey?
Yeah, they're in the Klingon bird of prey, remember? Because they crashed the Enterprise at the end of Search for Spock.
None of us remembers officially.
Okay, and they stole it from Christopher Lloyd's character. Commander Krang or Krug or something like that. Yeah, anyways.
Christopher Lloyd, the center of all time travel movies.
Clearly, yes. But in Star Trek IV, the sketchy physics part that I'm talking about is, that is the only time where I've ever heard anybody do something about like going around a star and that will magically bring you to another time. If that was the case, like that wouldn't be very hard.
They could be doing this all the time, theoretically.
Isn't that what happens in Interstellar, essentially, at one point?
Listen here, we'll get to Interstellar.
It's in the same category, Sean. Well done. So, regarding Interstellar, he ends up in a black hole, and then he's in a place where there's 1,000 different versions of the bookcase in his daughter's room.
Yes, and thus he can figure out how to communicate with her what's going on and how to get him back.
And collectively, the audience's eyes roll.
Well, no, I think that's a very challenging idea, okay? At least you start investigating what it would mean to do that. None of us know what's inside of a black hole. So at least Interstellar tries.
Right, it just took 4 hours to get there. Oh. With a big Matt Damon scene that was completely unnecessary.
Actually, it's in the center of a black hole. It's highly compressed atoms. There's no libraries in there.
What?
There's no air to breathe for sure.
Obviously.
It would compress him instantaneously into nothing.
Would it? That's the theory.
We're told. That's what we know.
What we're told. But in the movie, even, they're saying, like, I don't think this is going to work, but I've got to give it a shot. Otherwise, there's no chance. They've run out of all of their options. And so they say, like, all right, well, the things that we haven't thought of, we've got to go to that next. And that's what he does.
2001 A Space Odyssey.
What about it?
It's in the same category, I think.
Kind of. I don't see how there's time travel involved. I think that they're spanning time and that they're indicating that time is a loop.
And he comes out as like a fetus.
But he's not going into a black hole.
I don't know. You don't know where he goes.
We do know what the monolith is if you read it. Anyways. Sorry, guys. Join us.
Josh thinks Contact is a time travel movie, or that it's not. I can't remember, because I think at first you thought it was not.
I do think that there's some time travel involved or sketchy physics involved. And the reason why, in Contact, when they're about to send Jodie Foster's character into this device that's supposed to jettison her across the universe to Vega, what she experiences is like 18 hours of actual time that she records on her camera, on her video recorder, I should say. And they only show it as like a 15-second thing. Okay, and so clearly there's the bending of time or a wormhole that this device opens up, and that clearly is part of our categories here. I mean, be it sketchy physics, be it wormhole, whatever the case may be, we don't actually know how this works. But the movie theorizes that if you create an accelerative machine like that, then you could propel yourself across the universe using this thing. I think this is a really neat idea, but that's the only point in the film where they actually go through that.
Another sketchy physics one is Kate and Leopold. There's some kind of hole in the sky that if you go through it, you go into the future or the past. They're just connected by this hole. That's where the, I think, Brooklyn Bridge will be. And so he ends up, what's that guy's name?
Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman is in the future making fake butter commercials with, what's that girl's name?
Meg Ryan.
Well done.
Soft creamery butter.
Josh used to always say this soft creamery butter line without knowing what movie he was quoting.
How did you manage that?
It's fresh creamery butter, not soft.
Well, we have a lot of butter out at the house, and so I was always looking at it saying, like, soft creamery butter. I thought that it was Patrick Stewart saying it at some point, but no, apparently
it's
Hugh Jackman.
It's fake British Hugh Jackman.
I hated Kate and Leopold, by the way.
It's a fun movie.
I seem to be the only one that really hated it.
It is nonsense. But what do you hate about Kate and Leopold?
Well, because it is nonsense, and I'm more interested in the fact that he fell through this hole off the bridge.
That's not what the movie's about.
Remember, also,
I want it to be about something different. We do this all the time.
Remember who you thought was saying the fresh creamery butter line was the guy from Lethal Weapon?
Mel Gibson?
Lethal Weapon is wrong. Naked Gun. The guy.
Oh, yes. I thought that Richard Griffiths was saying it in Naked Gun 2.5.
Because he says something.
He sticks his spearheaded warrior into a quivering mound of love pudding.
Oh, dear God.
It's in Naked Gun 2.5. And so that same type of nonsense line, I thought that's what it was coming from. Anyway, we're getting way off the subject here.
I get what especially what women find interesting about that movie, which is, you know, Hugh Jackman is really handsome, like really ridiculously handsome, and it makes sense.
And I think she decides to go live in the past, which she can't possibly have thought through all the way. They did not have air conditioning.
I could not escape. It's like you want to go to a place that doesn't have plumbing. Like,
yeah, no, bad choice.
Air conditioning. No, I think absolutely they maybe not. No,
I think where he lived, they maybe did have plumbing and electricity, but not like refrigeration or air conditioning or anything.
Yeah,
they didn't have good plumbing.
Definitely no. They would have had like the earliest.
There would
toilets.
Have still been people throwing things out of windows somewhere.
Definitely. Oh, and she would have been exposed to illnesses that, you know, had not been around for some time too.
But at least she was going to be in a wealthy white family.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Well, which there, is yeah, what you there's want. Another movie that doesn't care about what the effect that she's going to have on the future, because she's going to do a number of things that's probably going to alter the future based off of her knowledge.
Like wear pants.
Have you seen Kate Leopold?
No.
I love your tone.
Speaking of Star Trek, I meant to bring up First Contact right after the Voyage Home, but Star Trek films, Voyage Home did the time travel thing, and then First Contact did as well. This is a Next Generation film with the Patrick Stewart crew and whatnot, and the Borg come into contact with the Federation. There's going to be a huge battle or whatnot. And right before, Jean-Luc knows how to annihilate this big Borg cube that's attacking Earth, they open a portal or a wormhole, and they travel back to the time of the first warp launch, or around that time. And the Enterprise follows them through. So you've got the Next Generation crew back in time, but not like our time, not
back
the present.
In time.
Exactly, exactly. And that film is kind of like if we would want to go back and witness the moon landing or something like that. They are going back to time to witness the dawn of warp drive and the dawn of the civilization that they are very familiar with. And I
have
always
to protect the timeline and make sure that the warp launch actually happens.
Yes,
because their whole future So at least they have that internal consistency, right, that they have to make sure this thing happens or they won't have ever come back to this point.
Yes, and they continue to talk about the Prime Directive and everything like that throughout the entire film. And I find First Contact to be the best of the Next Generation films. It seems to handle the time travel thing pretty easily. They're just talking about a simple time displacement equipment and whatnot that is just going to open this temporal vortex.
It makes sense for the Borg to have technology they don't, because they've been out accumulating the technology of all these.
Of course. If only the Borg knew to travel around the sun, then they would have been just fine.
That can only get you to the 80s. They had the first four plants.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
And there's another Star Trek movie with time travel.
Indeed. Star Trek 2009, the alternate Kelvin timeline film, which we've got Chris Pine as Captain Kirk and Zachary Quinto as Spock.
Oh, yeah. That's not a time travel movie.
Yes, it is, because we're talking about alternate timelines created by something because someone was sent back through time. The red matter creates that
hole. You think that
if
someone was sent back in time, and I don't remember that. I have to rewatch.
Yeah.
It's been a while, but somehow Zachary Quinto interacts with Spock. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how it happens.
I can tell everyone if you want to know, but I doubt that we want. Okay, good.
Go ahead.
Yeah. In the distant future.
If you haven't seen a movie from 2009, go fuck yourself.
Right. Spock, Elder Spock, Leonard Nimoy's character, is trying to assist the Romulans in saving their planet, which is near destruction. And so he theorizes that using this thing called red matter will absorb the encroaching star and make it so that Romulus will still exist. What happens, though, is that the star destroys the planet before he gets the chance to do this. And in that explosion, not only is a Romulan ship, but Spock's Leonard Nimoy Spock character is taken back through this portal created when that red matter is released. At that time, this huge Romulan ship led by Eric Bana, his character is called Nero, he comes upon a number of Federation starships in the time that we know of, when James Kirk isn't even born. He's about to be because something happens and all of a sudden.
Okay.
This whole timeline has changed.
It was the supernova created some type of time rift, and they go back
in time. The red matter combined with the supernova created a reaction that opened up time and space.
But you said it was before he got there to try the red matter.
It's accidental time travel.
Like, yeah, okay, so it's accidental time travel.
I thought you knew this movie better than I did.
Mm. I like to sleep during the movies because it's so cozy. Yes, you
do. But I do like the way this movie turns out. I do like the fact that it basically obliterates much of the timeline of the original Star Trek. That's pretty much on its own. And the moment there at the end when Spock meets Spock, I thought was really fantastic. I thought it was a great moment because it gives you the opportunity to see all these new Star Trek adventures that never happened.
Yeah,
it's essentially
the best kind
of
reboot.
Yeah, this is essentially creating a whole new timeline.
Even though they still encounter Khan in a second film, and they still have the 5-year mission with Star Trek Beyond, but for the most part, it opens up a number of other opportunities. The characters aren't going to react the same, etc. Okay, sketchy physics.
Do you think they're
going to
actually make the next one?
Yes, even though Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth are currently not in it, and that was the whole crux of the film. Like, they walked away from the project.
They'll pay him. It'll be fine.
Yeah, one of the producers said we don't need them.
Why do we
them.
Need Hemsworth, though, at all?
He's playing George Kirk again. It's going to involve time travel.
So they would have to have time travel. Hmm. Bob, do you think it'll be profitable if they pay them the amount that they want?
Probably.
Well, then they should do it. Mm. Bob's never wrong about that.
Right.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best three friends that anybody could have. I mean the three best friends that anybody could have.